The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. Then be that guy. Come shop at The Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's The Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.
Hey, everyone, and welcome to the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host, Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer and the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We cover the worlds of books and film and streaming TV and much more. We have two essential pieces of content to talk about this week. First, I'm going to speak with film critic Stephen Garrett about Sinners, the new Ryan Coogler written and directed 1930s blues vampire musical. You heard me right. All those elements exist together in one film, and that film is a real knockout. Really one of the best and most essential movies of the year, and if not in many years. And I'm also going to talk to TV critic Omar Gayaga and tech expert Omar Gayaga about the new season of Black Mirror, which is the Charlie Brooker written and mostly directed British series that is sort of a twilight zone of tech. You know what Black Mirror is at this point. It's in its seventh season, and Omar and I have watched the season and have a lot of thoughts about what Black Mirror is now compared to what it used to be. It's a really good conversation, and I encourage you all to stay around for that. But first, after this trailer, Stephen Garrett and I are going to pick apart Sinners. And boy, are you in for a treat when you see this one.
You keep dancing with the devil. One day he's gonna follow you home.
We heard tale of a party. It's about to get good.
Oh, he's just resting.
Oh, man, I know.
Admit to it that you dare.
You ain't safe here.
I'm gonna find a way out of this, I promise.
There's a tale of a movie review so powerful that it obliterates the barriers of time and space, and that it actually opens up the void between good and evil itself. And that movie review was written by Stephen Garrett in Book and Film Globe over the weekend. He reviewed Sinners, an incredibly popular and provocative new movie from director Ryan Coogler. This thing really has caught fire, Stephen. I think both you and I were really surprised at how much we liked Sinners. Didn't see it coming.
Wait, before you need to invite me in before. I can't make tale of such tales until properly invited into the conversation.
I don't know. You don't really sound like Steven. All right, yeah, come into the. Looks like you're a vampire. Anyway, Sinners is a vampire movie. If you didn't already guess, if you haven't already heard,
so much more.
It's a 1930s historical blues musical about vampires.
I was shaking my head. I was scratching my head. I was quizzical, like I had not heard of this movie at all.
Yeah,
until maybe 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, I was at a movie theater and I saw this poster up, and I said, "What the hell is this?" Yeah. And it just looked goofy as all get out, and the poster is just weird, and I was like, "Is this something about something in the 30s or 40s?" And I don't know. I had no idea. I was scratching my head, and then I asked somebody about it, and they said, "Oh yeah, I hadn't been invited to a screening yet, and I heard it was something about Michael B. Jordan having a twin, and I think there were vampires." And I was like, "What are you talking about?"
Yeah, I saw some. I've been seeing some previews for it here in Austin, but yeah. So it just kind of, people hadn't heard about it. It was poorly marketed. And it just kind of snuck up on us, and you know, it won the weekend. It beat out the Minecraft movie. It was the number one movie at the American box office. Was this black 1930s blues vampire musical? And it's freaking great. It's freaking great. It's so good. It's got everything you want out of a movie. It has some humor. I found that there was definitely some humorous moments. For sure.
Oh yeah.
Very sexy.
Sexy. It's a sexy movie.
Nothing arouses me specifically anymore. I'm getting old, but I was sexy. The music was phenomenal. Not only did they use archival blues and folk tunes, they also there was a sort of a blues themed score by Ludwig Göransson that was just phenomenal. And it's very dramatic, and it's also a scary vampire thriller. But not the scary, but not the goriest vampire thriller you're ever going to see. There wasn't like viscera spilled. It was just, you know, a straight up kind of vampire blood.
It was pretty gory.
It was gory.
I see a lot of blood.
There was a lot of, it was a vampire movie. But it was also like set in 1930s Mississippi, right? And Michael B. Jordan plays these twin brothers. He's on screen with himself a lot.
A lot. That first shot, and they kind of was like, yeah, this is going to work out. Look, I'm going to have a first shot that shows them sharing a cigarette together. And you're just like, what?
It worked, though.
It worked.
It worked perfectly well. And they're on screen a lot together. And they play these, their names are Smoke and Stack. I mean, I guess they had actual names, but there's, as far as we know, they're Smoke and Stack. And there are these twins who were World War I veterans who then went to Chicago and worked for Al Capone.
Yeah, like, already listen to yourself like, what? They were in World War I together and then they worked for Al Capone? Like, what?
Crazy, right?
Yeah. Did you like the color coding of the dressing so that you could know which twin is which?
Right. One was wearing a red hat, one was wearing a blue hat. Something like, I didn't really matter to me which twin was which. You know, I was just like, oh, they were pretty similar. They had pretty similar personalities. The difference was that one of them, is having sex with a witch, a very, very, very sexy, voluptuous black witch. And the other one is,
had a
mojo bag to protect him against the vampires, which turned out to really, come in handy. And the other one was having sex with Haley Steinfeld, who I suppose is like, that is one of the Haley Steinfeld. She plays like she has some African-American blood in her, but she's basically the film's main white character. But she is smoking in this thing. My God in heaven. Am I wrong?
No, you're not wrong at all. And also, you know, and I thought it was actually they drop in early when you meet her, how her mother has died and she's a little sad. But then they bring it back in this really eerie scene where she's encountering some other characters. I won't get into more detail, but I was surprised at how emotional she had some range that she was able to play with. She made the most of that character and I really felt for her.
Well, let's be clear. Haley Steinfeld is an Oscar nominated actor. She was nominated for her young child performance in the Coen brothers' True Grit. And she has, you know, she's an excellent actor. But, you know, she generally does this pretty light fare, but here she carries this. She's tremendous. And let's be clear too. Michael B. Jordan is also fantastic in this movie. He's a star.
You're saying this is the most dramatic performance she's had since Pitch Perfect 2.
Yeah. That's another thing. She's a pop star. She's in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and here she is playing.
But she doesn't sing, like you pointed out. She doesn't sing. That is a missed opportunity.
Yeah, she's one of the few characters in the movie who doesn't sing.
And what do you make of that middle sequence? We don't have to describe it too much, but it is mind blowing. That crazy, like swing for the fences thing that Ryan Coogler does, where you're just like, wait, what? I think this is working.
It's just like the history of black music, told through. Through song and dancing, and it's fantastic. It's just fantastic. I mean, I'm just like, all right, fine, why not? And you know, because Sonny, the blues, the main blues player, this young actor who's making his
debut.
I'm sorry, Sammy.
He's Preacher Boy, right? Preacher Boy, Sammy.
Preacher Boy, yeah. Who he plays this song that literally metaphorically burns down the roadhouse, and it attracts the attention of our villain. And what a villain! That's the thing too. This Jack O'Connell plays. I think his name is Reddick.
I think it's Remick.
Remick, like the editor of editor of the New Yorker.
the editor of the New Yorker comes.
David Remnick warns us that this is not normal. This is a constitutional crisis, says David Remnick, and then he proceeds to turn everyone into vampires. Remick, he's an Irish vampire, and has a beautiful folk singing voice. He can really play the banjo, And he comes, and you know, he's an interesting character because, I mean, he's very, very, very villainous. I mean, what a terrible, evil creature he is, but
he has a few points. He makes some good points as a vampire.
As a vampire, he's like, okay, yes, he's an evil blood-sucking fiend.
And then he's like, but hear me out.
and you're like, well, you know, maybe being a vampire doesn't sound so bad, really. I mean,
that was crazy. I was not expecting that twist, and there were so many twists I was not expecting. Oh my god! And I kept thinking, oh wait, this is going a bit in this direction. Oh, now it's going in that direction. Wait, what is happening? This is wild.
And the vampire stuff doesn't even start until an hour into the movie or so, and it's still good. It's still entertaining. It's still gripping because Ryan Coogler really like gathers these characters, you know, and really makes them feel alive and vivid and real. And, you know, the stuff he does with the Chinese family in the grocery store.
Grace Chow and Bo Chow. Oh my God. Grace Chow's up. Gosh, she'll kick your ass. My God. At the end.
Really good stuff. It's just a brilliantly put together piece of pop culture. You know, that's because the thing is like, yeah, it is a very thought provoking, movie, like you said in your piece, it feels, you know, it has some of the same themes that indie film does, but it is a big budget Hollywood block. It also has a blockbuster vibe to it.
It does. You definitely get the sense that he's, you know, this is a guy who's made like a big budget Hollywood movie. Of course, he made Black Panther and Black Panther Wakanda Forever. He made both those movies, I think, a lot smarter and a lot more heartfelt than they might have ended up being in lesser hands.
And I do love, I didn't like Wakanda Forever, but everyone loves Black Panther, and you know, he made the Creed movies, which I'm not a huge fan of, but there certainly was some skill that go, you know, and nuance that went into them. But this thing, I mean, this Sinners is just, it's a huge fence swing, and he just smacks it out of the park. It's just so inventive, and there's not a wasted scene. There's not a wasted shot. The sound is immersive. The visuals are beautiful. Like you said, it's got everything you want in a movie: sex, violence, humor, and also let's not forget some of the older characters. Delroy Lindo plays an old Delta blues man who is
Delta Slim.
Yeah. He is so good. That scene where they're driving along the road and he talks about this, whatever, something lynching that happened to a friend of his, and you kind of hear the scene going on in the background. That was so creative and so clever and so meaningful. And then
he shits his pants.
Then he shits his pants.
I think I just shat my pants.
I don't blame you.
I don't blame you,
Delta Slim. Speaking of old blues men, Buddy Guy.
Oh my God! Wow.
Shows up at the end. I mean, at the very end, that epilogue. The movie ended, and you didn't need any more. But that end.
Movie fully ended, satisfying, resolved movie. Boom, ended, and then
there's this epilogue that also is just great and works fantastically well.
And it's funny.
And funny, and it also makes you think like, oh, maybe the ending wasn't what we thought. The other ending wasn't exactly what we thought it was. And I'm like, were we really just kind of watching a historical episode of True Blood?
I mean, Haley Steinfeld looks like a bag of dancer from In Living Color. I mean, the costume design, the same one who won the Oscar for the movies he made.
For Black Panther, Ruth.
Yeah, Ruthie Brown? Ruthie Brown.
Well, the costumes are incredible. I mean, this is just Hollywood filmmaking, you know, at as good as it can get in 2025. And I know you didn't love this quite as much as I did, but I feel like this is a game-changing movie, potentially, in ways that I haven't seen in a long time.
I'm sorry, Ruthie Carter. I do want to get her name right. Ruthie Carter, Oscar winner, and did amazing on the costumes. But to your point, you can do that if you're working a big budget studio. You get all the details right, and you've got the money enough to make sure everything looks and sounds fantastic. Yeah. And they shot this on, I didn't see it in IMAX, but they shot with IMAX cameras, apparently, 65 millimeter. It looks amazing. The cinematography is great. And the music, like you're saying, the score, so smart.
It's basically
sophisticated.
Basically, they got the best possible everything that Hollywood has to offer right now. The best costume designer, the best composer. And Ryan Coogler, certainly one of the best directors. You know, it was extremely well written and incredibly well performed. And it just also, I just feel like it kind of takes certain genre films and just turns them on their heads and gives them a kind of depth and perspective that I haven't seen before. So I really said, I was like, I haven't seen a movie that had this much potential to change the game in Hollywood since Pulp Fiction. I know that's crazy. I know that sounds crazy.
You're crazy.
They hear tell of a movie.
They bit you. They infected you, man. It's given you fellowship.
Yeah, yeah. They picked me clean, Stephen. I don't know. I don't know. I feel like this is it's just kind of, there have been so many disappointments at the movie theater in the last, you know, since 2020, that to see something this lively and this creative and this, like, wholeheartedly in every possible way, good and bad, American, you know, the themes are so American, you know,
more than that. It is very American. He really leans into it. You know what I found really interesting too? Not that these characters aren't religious, but the way that they talk about Catholicism being thrust upon them and not really being their own, that really struck me. I thought that was really interesting. Remember how he says, like, blues is the only really original thing that we brought over.
But there are hints of, you know, sort of old African religiosity, both in the dancing sequence and in the, you know, the character.
Oh, for sure. But I thought it was really interesting that you know, preacher boy Sammy is rebelling against his father,
yeah.
And that doesn't necessarily end up with him going back into the fold there at the end. Well, I don't want to ruin anything, but, you know.
And so is the Catholic vampire,
right,
the Irish
right.
Catholic vampire, mind you. But, you know, you can see this as a metaphor for immigration. There's, and assimilation.
And tribalism.
And there's like, yeah. And then there's a Ku Klux Klan subplot on top of it all. we didn't even mention.
Because fundamentally, yeah, we didn't even mention that. And the Juke Joint is a black-owned business. I mean, this is also about, you know, owning your own place and, you know, communing with your own community.
Right, but they're also, you know, vicious criminals. Let us not forget. They work for Al Capone.
Well, they are that too.
Al Capone. Yes. They're gangsters. They're gangsters.
Having that scene where he shoots those guys in the street. Oh, my God.
Right. Like, this is like, he's like Tony Soprano, you know? These aren't good guys. I mean, they're well-rounded, interesting characters, but these are not.
I think they're sinners. Could you even say that? Maybe
they could be even be sinners. All right, well, look. Stephen and I have now given away all the good parts of the movie, but I will say, like, this is just something that I think it has to be seen on the big screen. I'm going to see it again for sure. I mean, it was so immersive. Just the sound design alone and the music alone is so good and so haunting.
Can I just say, this was one of the, like you're saying, this is a mainstream movie. This is an entertaining movie. This is not arty at all, but it has artistic vision. And Ryan Coogler not only directed, but wrote and kind of co-produced, well, not kind of, he was one of the main producers on it as well. This is very much his vision. But I tell you, man, I got in that movie, and about 20 minutes in, I'm like, man, I should have gotten some popcorn. I'm a little hungry. I'm sure there'll be a lull where I could step out and go get some popcorn. And scene after scene, I was like, I can't leave yet. I can't leave yet. Oh, man, this movie's actually pretty good. Wow. This is a lot better than I thought. It's great when a movie kind of creeps up on you and just jumps on you.
Yeah, it just kind of swallows you up. And that's what's bites you until you turn into a vampire. That's what that's what Sinners does. And, you know, I mean, it's definitely going to be on my best of 2025 list. And if I see better movies than this movie this year, it's going to be a good year.
It's going to be a damn
year. I've already seen several movies this year that were better than anything I saw last year, but nothing so far has topped Sinners. And I would recommend that you fly if you can to see it
with your cape and your fangs.
If you're a vampire, go see it after like the sun goes down. If you're not, and just see it anytime you want. And see it on as big a screen and with as loud a sound system as possible.
Yeah.
You won't regret it. Now, Stephen, if you'll excuse me, I gotta go count the till, because we're gonna be stomping tonight here.
It's gonna be a wang dang doodle, let me tell you. Wang dang,
we're stomping tonight here at the Party Shack. Yes sirree. All right, Stephen Garrett, thank you so much. I'll bite you later.
All right.
Sometimes we have to do things that we don't want to do.
I just want something magical, timeless.
Come with me.
We'll all be cyborgs before long.
Yeah.
Just remember that they're AIs. To them, this is real.
Ready?
I'm ready.
All right, Omar, I want you to put your nubbin in. Put your nubbin on your temple.
Check.
All right. Enter segment. And we are in. Omar Gayaga is here to talk to me about season 7. It's hard to believe we're in season 7 of Black Mirror, the dystopian British sci-fi show about technology and how it's changing our lives and our souls. It's from creator Charlie Brooker. And it is, at this point, I would say, Omar, that Black Mirror has just kind of become, it's become a genre unto itself, right?
It's an institution. Yeah, I think we were all kind of concerned when it moved over to Netflix, and there was a lot of nitpicking about the length of episodes expanding and the number of bigger name stars, being attached to these episodes. I think we've kind of gotten used to that. I think we're kind of past those complaints, although I still think the episodes are way too long compared to the original run in England. But yeah, I would think we're kind of at a point where Black Mirror is its own thing. And every time there's a new season, I think we've come to anticipate it and think, oh, good. More Black Mirror. It's great.
Was it not on Netflix initially?
No, it was on, I believe it was on the BBC. I think Netflix got it in the third or fourth season. And that's when you started to see it, turn into like hour long episodes with bigger stars.
But it aired in the US on Netflix, right?
I don't think that initial first season or two did until Netflix started making new ones.
All right. I seem to have always, I don't know. It's hard to say. It's hard for me to gauge what is real and what is in the matrix. I'm having trouble distinguishing my media consumption reality from my actual reality. I don't know if maybe some of the things in those episodes actually happened to me.
I don't remember where I consumed those first two or three seasons, but yeah, those first seasons that only had three episodes were I think on the BBC.
Originally BBC. They're on Netflix now. I mean, everything is now on Netflix.
But I think at that time, when Black Mirror started, you had that very tight format of 30-minute episodes,
Yes.
that was why. And once it went over to Netflix, it's like, we don't have to stick to 30 minutes. Charlie Brooker can write as much as he wants and go as far as he wants with these. So that's how you get a 90-minute Callister sequel episode.
Yeah. I mean, it's one thing if these episodes are running 43 or 47 minutes, but when you're looking at 90 minutes, essentially what you got is a season of mini movies.
Right. Yeah. I mean, most of these episodes clock in at close to an hour, if not more than that. And I think Callister, the USS Callister sequel, which is the last episode of the new season, and we can get into the individual episodes, but I think that one, given its star power, given that it's Kristen Milioti and Jesse Plemons, and I think most people will be very forgiving that it's 90 minutes and as well received as the first one was. I think people will be okay with a 90-minute Black Mirror episode.
I was okay with it. That's the last episode of the season, but we can start with that one, right? Since we're talking about it already. Yeah, I was okay with it. I thought 90 minutes was probably 20 minutes too long. I felt like, it could have gotten to the point quicker. And I also felt like the point was pretty similar to the point that the original USS Callister made, which was kind of a riff on immersive gaming and the dangers of cloning, really. Like, yeah, they somehow managed to combine the two, but it was and also is a great satire of Star Trek, the original Star Trek. The second one, I don't think really covers any new ground. It is like legitimately just a sequel.
Yeah, it's more of a okay, how do we get out of this situation that we put ourselves in? I did like the commentary at the beginning about kind of what online video games have become, kind of this cash grab of microtransactions and people just kind of marauding and killing each other. I thought that was kind of clever. But yeah,
and if there had been an episode about that, that would have been, because what Charlie Brooker does so well, right, is he takes this conceit And he just builds on it and builds on it and builds on it to the point of absurdity. And you know, it takes this stuff to its logical conclusion. And I feel like the Callister sequel kind of abandoned that in favor of just kind of a continuing the continuing saga of our favorite characters.
Yeah, and it was sort of combining that element, the video game element, with the guy marooned in his own creation element of the, you know, bringing the Jesse Plemons character back, and then sort of the I don't know, there might have been one or two other threads that it was trying to combine, but you know, it coasts a lot on the charm of its stars, and that the writing is pretty snappy, and that it's overall, you know, a fun tone. It's not nearly as dark as some of the other episodes.
Oh no, it was very enjoyable. It was very enjoyable. Don't get me wrong.
Give me 90 minutes of Kristen Milioti in anything, and I'm in.
She was horsing around, and really having a good time in it.
Yeah, and she plays two of her. So like, yeah, double the Milioti.
There's a lot of her. Yeah, that's a theme because Stephen and I just talked about Sinners, and there are two Michael B. Jordans, two Kristen Miliotis is just. It's close to at least the TV version of it.
It's dangerous technology, because if it's Milioti or Michael B. Jordan, I'm on board. If it's lesser actors that we don't like,
or Tim Allen or something. So yeah.
Yeah. Two Tim Allens. No go. Yeah,
it's possible. It could be coming to Ryan Reynolds. You know, that's
a Black Mirror episode. That feels like a dark.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing. And so, okay. So that's the USS Callister into Infinity. I think we each had a different favorite one of this season. I will admit that the one episode, the one with Peter Capaldi plaything, I have not yet watched. I've watched five out of the six. I just couldn't.
I kind of liked that one. I really liked, I'm not going to spoil anything, but I really liked how that one ended. And it's basically, as some friends of mine said on another podcast, it's like, you know, Tamagotchis, but more, you know, or you know, it's about kind of sim life type, you know, creations, artificial kind of like, and it's sort of a sideways unofficial sequel to Bandersnatch.
Okay.
The same, the Will Poulter character appears again as a game designer.
Oh, he does. The same character appears.
Yeah. The same game designer from Bandersnatch. Yeah. Appears in this episode
from Bandersnatch.
But he's not the main character. He sort of sets up the premise of it.
But that's the thing about Black Mirror, is that there's this sort of universe now, like Streamberry, which is our fake Netflix Monkey streaming service, appears in the Philomena Kunk shows that Charlie Brooker writes, and Streamberry makes an appearance yet again in the episode, I don't remember the title of it, about the Hollywood star who, you know, gets sort of trapped in an old movie.
The Hotel Reverie, yeah, that one.
Hotel Reverie. Now, I'm a lover of Turner Classic Movies, and so I appreciated kind of the satire of Casablanca and Brief Encounter that Hotel Reverie provided. And I thought that Emma Corrin, who plays this black and white movie star, an AI version of a black and white movie star, I thought she was very good in her part in that movie. I felt like the sort of lesbian, forbidden lesbian love trapped in an AI simulation has been done on Black Mirror.
Yeah. This was definitely a callback to San Junipero. The I think that was the season four episode. That is widely considered to be the fan favorite Black Mirror episode, the one of the few Black Mirror episodes with a relatively happy ending that people love. And yeah, this definitely echoed back to that. I think there was a couple of San Junipero references this season, like Juniper Hospital.
Well, Issa Rae's character lives on San Junipero Drive. That package she gets at the end is addressed to her. So yeah, there's some Easter eggs for fans. You know, I felt like that episode was hampered a bit. I felt like Issa Rae's performance was a bit flat.
Yeah. There's already been some online backlash on her performance. And, you know, she's a very good comedic actress. You know, I watched all of Insecure and loved her in it. But she's playing, you know, a person inserted into, you know, a beloved classic, you know, Turner type movie, and her acting chops are not. She's playing a version of Issa Rae, not even trying to play like a dramatic character. So there was a big disconnect.
Yeah, she just was not. She was just not a match for Emma Corrin, who I thought was terrific. And I also, it's not like the movie, the episode itself. You know, Awkwafina plays this movie producer, this digital movie producer. She was very entertaining. I almost would have rather seen her inserted into the narrative. She just had a lot more juice.
Yeah, it would have been interesting if those roles had been switched. I think Issa Rae would have been great as the producer person. I think that's what held that episode back. And again, that was another one where strong premise, great visuals. I thought was really, really well done. Everything is convincing. The sets look great. The effects are plausible for the technologies that we're seeing. This one especially, I thought it had a lot of really good visual style to it. But I think what held it back was the Issa Rae performance and then the length. I halfway through, I was like, I see where this is going. I got it. You know, I'm with you, but like it just felt baggy. Like it felt really, sagged in the middle a lot for such a little bit.
I did like the ending. I found the ending moving. But yes, I agree with you there. So let's talk a little bit about the tech, because you're a tech guy, really, at the end of the day. I mean, you contain multitudes like any person, Omar. I don't mean to just peg you as a tech guy, but you know a lot more about tech. You report on tech than the average person. It seems to me that the tech for season 7 of Black Mirror, a lot of it are these sort of brain implants that you attach to your temples. It feels like there's a version of that or something like that in almost every episode.
Yeah, the wireless, like the nubbin, they call it. And yeah, that's become, I think, shorthand in Black Mirror, because you saw that before in previous seasons. It's sort of like, I think one of the season 1 or season 2 episodes, the one about the guy who records all of, everything in front of him. Everybody's recording their memories and playing them back to bad ends. that was kind of the first time we saw that. But it's become shorthand, I think, in Black Mirror as like, okay, a device that interfaces with your brain and lets you enter, games or, virtual spaces. That has become sort of the signature device. It's interesting that the Black Mirror universe is becoming more cohesive with these ideas and these sort of standardized technology formats. And that to me feels very real and very plausible. It's almost, that's kind of what Meta is trying to do, with all of its different virtual platforms and social media platforms. You could see a company kind of doing that where they own Streamberry, they own the nubbins, they own the platforms and are buying the movie studios that are trying to make these movies. Like you could see that as a kind of unified Charlie Brooker MCU type situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's integrating, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, as a tech person, I mean, it's been interesting that some of the tech that Black Mirror has been talking about and in dialogue with for the last, I don't know how long Black Mirror has been on, at least
10 years
It feels longer. I think it's been longer than that.
Yeah, maybe longer.
It might have been 10 years on Netflix and then some years before that. But it feels like some of the technologies that it discussed early in the early seasons have sort of caught up with us, have sort of come to fruition in some way. The idea of consciousness, uploading, the ideas of what happens to to your social medias after you die, like all that stuff has become things people talk about more now and things people consider more now than they did, 10, 15 years ago.
It's getting close-ish. It's still, when you watch The Black Mirror, like it's still, it still feels 5, 10, 15 years. We're still a bit behind. Like we're not being thrust into these photos. we're not yet, our consciousnesses are not yet adrift in our virtual memories. I know that games are more immersive now than they were, but they're still not immersive in the same way that Black Mirror is. But I wanted to talk about what was my favorite episode of the season, which was Common People, which is the first one that airs on Netflix. And that's that one I would say probably has the most star power of any of them. It stars Chris O'Dowd and Rashida Jones as a pretty down on their heels. They're pretty much a working class couple, right? They're in.
Yeah, she's a teacher. He's in some sort of construction job.
He's a welder.
Welder, yes.
Yeah. And these are not people with a lot of money. And she suffers from some sort of brain tumor. Some kind of brain disease, and he gets sucked in by this company, which is represented in the show, if not run by, but represented by Tracy Ellis Ross, who is deliciously creepy.
She's fantastic, yeah.
Yeah, really, like, just such a electrically, like, she's just the ultimate, like, tech bureaucrat, salesperson, really, who manages to sell them on this this device, this brain implant, that basically replaces the portion of Rashida Jones's brain that has the tumor and allows her to function. But, the problem is that It's they keep upgrading the system, and Rashida Jones and Chris O'Dowd can't afford the upgrades.
It's a cloud-based brain system. Basically, her brain is uploaded to the cloud and needs the cloud to function, and has, you know, a wireless range where she can't go out of a certain range without, you know, going into a coma, basically.
Right.
And then the story becomes, you know, how can they keep up with the continually upgrading tiers of service of this company that's growing and expanding? And it becomes a commentary on Netflix itself, I think, just, you know, with the premium and the plus and the lux tiers.
Right. But I mean, you know, there's a big difference between paying $7 and $20 and paying $300 and $800, which is what the brain company that is running Rashida Jones's life is doing. And she starts like spouting ads, like these ads embedded into her virtual consciousness. And then in order to pay for the upgrades, Chris O'Dowd had this is why I think this is the best Black Mirror episode. Cause you not only have the brain implant thing, you also have this debasing online platform that where Chris O'Dowd, I think it's called Dummy Dum Dum.
Yeah. Something like that. It's an OnlyFans for masochists.
So do these degrading masochistist thing, like drink his own pee and like just do horrible things to himself.
Mousetrap his tongue,
do other disgusting things. And then people give him money in order to fund. It's a vicious satire of OnlyFans.
Yeah. And the subscription service, I think is, you know, it's not just commenting on Netflix. It's commenting on the whole culture of, you know, we have become inured into subscription, you know, everything is a subscription now. And then this is sort of the next logical step is your body is a subscription service. Your consciousness is a subscription service.
So good. So good. And I feel like, you know, unlike some of the other episodes which I felt like sometimes, you know, Charlie Brooker is not always, he's not always a vicious satire. He does sometimes wallow in sentiment as a writer. This did not. This was just hardcore, vicious.
Yeah, and with a very spiky ending. Yeah, which is more traditional Black Mirror, is a very dark, dystopian, you know, like no hope kind of ending, as opposed to some of the others where there is more of a happier resolution.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna just end, I think, this segment on sort of just an ordinary note, but I do have to let you know, Omar, that we have gone over the 15-minute mark, and that means you actually have to stay in this Zencastr app, or a version of you has to stay in here talking to me forever.
Oh no!
Yes,
that is a twist.
Yeah. Well, I neglected to. I tried to cut it short, but then the conversation was too interesting. So, I mean, there will be a version of you that exists outside of it, but the version of you that exists inside here will not be aware of that version. So,
well, if I can keep getting new seasons of Black Mirror in this space, then I'm fine to stay for a while.
We can at least pretend. We can pretend that they're very interesting. So it's you and me, buddy, trapped inside here forever. Thank you for joining us now and forever.
Thank you, Neil. I'll be seeing you.
All right. Thank you so much, Omar Gayaga. Trapped forever in the book and film globe matrix with me, Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer and the editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. Omar and I talked about the new season of Black Mirror, which is now airing on Netflix. And I also talked to Stephen Garrett about Sinners, which is in theaters now. See it on the largest screen possible with the best sound system you can find. You will not regret it. It's a movie experience you will always remember. We will be back next week to talk about more books and film and streaming TV. I look forward to being here with you then, and maybe forever. Maybe we're just trapped in this electronic matrix forever, and that's fine. That's just the way life is now. Thanks a lot for listening. I'll talk to you soon.
Original production. The Bookhouse is an independent bookstore with two locations in New Jersey, Millburn and Long Branch. Are you the guy who says they like to support indie bookstores? Good. then be that guy. Come shop at the Bookhouse. Books, puzzles, games, coffee, cards, live author events, comedy nights, and most important, a real sense of community where actual human beings engage with one another. The Bookhouse in downtown Millburn and at Pier Village in Long Branch. That's the Bookhouse. Independent, local, quaint as fuck. Follow us on Instagram and come visit our stores.